So I'm the and other vector-borne diseases part of the session tonight, the non-malaria talk. I have many co-authors on this paper and collaborators in this work, and we are generously funded by the NIH through an R01 and through my collaborators K01. We have no relationships to disclose, sadly. That would be awesome if we did. And knowledge in addition to NIH, some other funding sources at Penn. So I don't know what the Chavez awareness is in the room, but it is a vector-borne neglected tropical disease. We put the neglected in tropical disease for sure. In the Americas, it's actually the source of more morbidity and mortality than malaria, a fairly high burden disease. It is transmitted by many vectors in Arequipa, where we work in Peru. It's a triatomine infestans, locally known as a chirimacha. Looks a little bit like kind of a small dainty cockroach. What makes Chagas particularly difficult in terms of prevention is its epidemiologic features. There is an acute phase. This is a kid with the acute stage, the swollen eye, the Romania sign. But more typically, you might get infected as a child or a young adult and have no symptoms immediately. The disease can go latent and actually reemerge decades later, 10, 20, 30 years later, when it invades the small muscle tissue, a smooth muscle tissue of the heart and GI tract, and produces pretty serious, potentially fatal cardiac and GI symptoms. So because of this sort of delayed onset, some motivating households to engage in preventive behavior, including IRS campaigns, can be challenging. So our study site is in Arequipa. It's in the southern part of Peru. It's the second largest city after Lima. And I'm going to talk today about some results from one district in the city, Mariano Melgar, which is in sort of rotation in the indoor residual spray campaign that's moving through the city of Arequipa district by district that's been going on for almost 10 years now. Just so you know how the indoor residual spray campaign works, it is run by the government, so we work with MINSA, the Ministry of Health. They go basically door to door once they've targeted a district to engage in the campaign. Basically, on Monday morning, a health promoter, our community field workers, will go down a block knocking on doors and saying, the campaign is here, the sprayers will be here tomorrow, here's what you need to do to prepare your house, which involves moving furniture away from the walls, rounding up your bedding and your textiles, putting your food away, and being out of the home for several hours during and then after spray. And it's sort of like waiting for the Comcast guy. They'll say, like, we'll try to be here between like 8 and 11, but people know that's actually sort of a longer wait window. And of course, households are free to participate or refuse to participate or agree to participate and not be there the next day or never answer the door or whatever else they choose. In Mariano Melgar, we have been seeing quite low participation, which was consistent with some of the most recently sprayed districts, down around 60 or 70%, which really makes the whole campaign quite ineffective. It's like vaccination. You kind of need all the households to spray so that the vector is controlled and doesn't reemerge right away. So this study was part of a much longer effort to understand both motivators and barriers to participation with the goal of designing specific interventions that would increase participation in subsequent districts where we were spraying. So this particular study is a mixed qualitative-quantitative elicitation study informed by theory of plant behavior. We did two focus groups with only refusers. So we were in Mariano Melgar. They had already experienced what we call the attack phase of the campaign, the IRS phase, and we sampled from people who had said no to that part of the campaign. We held those focus groups at a health center, and we also invited health center staff who had refused in the previous campaign to come to the focus groups as well. We also, in the surrounding neighborhood in Mariano Melgar, did 71 semi-structured interviews. That was from a sampling frame of the larger part of the neighborhood. We sort of stratified and oversampled, again, refuser households. We wanted to get their perspectives specifically. Our response rate was about 15%, which includes households that didn't even answer the door and several who said, no thanks, don't want to talk to you. 59% female, median age 52, which are the folks we're going to find at home during the day when we interview, and very low awareness or knowledge of someone actually knowing someone who had Chagas, which again sort of contributes to our motivators to participate in the spray campaign. You'll see both sort of qualitative and quantitative descriptions of these data. So I'm just going to walk through the sort of thematic results, which are in black, and I'll let you read some of the participant quotes that have been translated from the Spanish in the orange there, just to give you an idea of sort of the set of themes that we heard, and I'll tell you what we did with those results as well. So in terms of knowing about the indoor residual spray campaign and the source of that knowledge, about two-thirds of participants had heard about it from the field worker. Didn't know a lot about the campaign before, although there is some promotion at the neighborhood level, sort of loudspeakers on trucks driving around and posters. But most people said, yeah, I heard about it when the promotora came to my door. And then we asked them sort of what do you remember hearing about the campaign or what messages stuck with you. Most of them remembered sort of hearing about the bug itself. They called the kissing bug or the chiramacha. Fewer remembered information about Chagas itself, you know, how you get it, what happens to you. And very few remembered sort of talking specifically about the mechanics of the campaign and sort of concerns about side effects from insecticide. We were very interested in the spray decision as potentially a social behavior, and asked about, you know, did you talk with anyone else in making the decision about whether your household was going to participate or not? Most had said, yeah, I consulted with my family if they weren't sort of head of household, you know, my spouse, my parents if they live with us. Although 20% had not talked to anyone else, they had just made the decision when the promotora was at the door, and about 6% said they had consulted other residents in their neighborhood, which was interesting to us. In terms of the decision to accept indoor residual spray, people first cited sort of health and well-being, like we wanted to eliminate this vector so we wouldn't get Chagas. That was primary. This idea that spraying, participating will kind of clean your home in terms of cleaning it of the bug, sort of getting rid of the bug, which is a little bit stigmatized, kind of, you know, sort of dirty to have in your house. And the smallest group citing this sort of sense of civic duty, which again was important for us, kind of listening for potential motivators. I like this quote a lot down at the bottom here. The reality is that one should take advantage of this campaign because it is good, not only for a home, but on a national level. So understanding that the campaign is a sort of a group behavior. Lots more information about reasons for rejecting or refusing the campaign. The modal response, the highest group, said it was just really inconvenient. You can't be told on Monday afternoon that the spray campaign is coming back Tuesday morning and be expected to wait around all day, especially if you work and need to be out of the home. Another group feeling that it was unnecessary, which we think is linked to this idea of not knowing anyone with Chagas, not being aware of the severity and risk of Chagas. A sizable chunk concerned about health impacts of the spray, so not really wanting, you know, insecticide, which we use deltamethrin in the campaign, not wanting that sprayed on their walls and their homes, worrying about sort of kids and pets and older adults. And then another chunk about the same size, just reporting like it was hard to prep the house, like moving all that furniture was hard, arranging to be out of the house. This quote at the bottom, interesting too, those who come to fumigate look at what we have, they tell thieves, and so there's a lack of trust, this idea that the spray campaign is casing the joint. And in Arequipa, property taxes are based on your square footage, and there's a concern that they're going to see, you know, the new addition that you made that isn't on the tax rolls, and somehow the zoonotic campaign folks will tell the tax folks and your tax bill will go up. But so completely, you know, legitimate concern that might affect your decision there. And some other quotes here, the same issues on top, but you know, worrying about kids. I've got grandchildren, 1, 2, 3 years old. They pass their hands along the wall as they walk. So you know, how can I fumigate if they're going to be doing that? I was scared. And then the hassle with the furniture mentioned here. Just to look at it briefly quantitatively, so these are the barriers to spray. We see the difficulty preparing the home coming up on top, the distrust of the sprayers, side effects concerns, the odor of the spray, and then this the Comcast problem, the sprayers arriving late and not having a lot of choice about the schedule, and then some reasons with less response. Benefits, consistent with the qualitative responses, doing it for health reasons, doing it to eliminate insects, the idea of cleanliness, and sort of for the children. The campaign in Arequipa started when a child actually died of Chagas, and it's very much associated with risk to children, and that's often a motivator at the kind of community level. We were also interested in, of course, interventions to increase participation in future campaigns. So we sort of threw that out to the respondents. What would you do, or what could we do in a subsequent campaign to get you to participate if you had refused? And one thing we wanted to know is, do you think it would help to sort of communicate the epidemiology of Chagas? We didn't use that term, but, you know, more knowledge about the disease, would that motivate you? And about a quarter said, well, yeah, I mean, I guess I am at risk, and knowing more about that would help. We were particularly interested in incentives. We work from a behavioral economics standpoint and curious if either financial or non-financial incentives would be motivating for people. And about half, and it wasn't divided, it's either like you totally knew they would work or you totally knew they wouldn't work at all. There wasn't a lot of wishy-washy on that. And, you know, very easy for people to say, yeah, we should get more information about Chagas. That would help. Some ideas around better scheduling, actually providing logistical support to prepare the house, and this sort of professionalization of the spray brigade. You know, they should show ID, they should show up on time. And another interesting idea, which we are pursuing with the Ministry of Health, is doing more promotion in the schools to sort of get children excited to come home and say, you know, we have to get ready, the campaign is coming, do we have bugs in the house? Which is a neat idea too. So what have we done with this? That formative work was, almost 2 years ago now. We went through an R01 submission process with the NIH to do a large cluster randomized field trial of about 5,000 households in a district that hadn't been sprayed yet. And as I said, we work from a behavioral economics standpoint using sort of a behavioral design framework. So we sort of used that formative work and other observational work from working with the campaign for many years to identify actionable bottlenecks. And then from our kind of behavioral insights, behavioral economic toolkit, looking at specific strategies or cognitive biases or heuristics affecting the decision process, and merging those into three different interventions that kind of target different sets of these bottlenecks. So the first one is around logistics and planning. We try to come visit the household ahead of time, like 2 weeks ahead of time instead of the day before. We all imagine, we're present biased creatures, and we imagine an emptier calendar 2 weeks from now than we imagine tomorrow. So get people sort of commit when they like feel like they're not going to be as busy 2 weeks from now. Give them a planning prompt. So you know, make a plan for the day the spray is going to come. What are you going to do? Do you need anyone to help you move the furniture? Refrigerator magnets, we give them a Sharpie and they write down their appointment time. And then we offer them a narrow window schedule. So here's if you sign up now, we'll give you a 2-hour window when we'll try to be there. The second one was a more social intervention, sort of leveraging the social capital in the neighborhood and social peer pressure. So we recruited sort of block leaders, opinion leaders. It was often the lady who run the corner tienda or the internet kiosk or the lady who came around to sell alfalfa for the guinea pigs. Got her on board, gave her a pretty extensive training, like a 3 or 4 hour training session. She got a great t-shirt that said, I sprayed, did you? Cell phone minutes. And then she was given about 10 or 20 households to visit, again, in advance of the campaign coming, just to answer questions, to kind of apply that peer pressure, just to keep track of who was still not on board yet. And finally, since we're incentives people, we did a contingent group lottery. So households in this arm were placed in groups of 5 to 7 households contiguous along a block. They were all given a number between 1 and 45 that corresponded with the national Tinka Mega Bowl, the national lottery, and they were told a date on which their group, it would be their lottery drawing. So May 17th is your lottery drawing date. And then the spray campaign would come, and what they were told in advance of the campaign is when it comes time for your drawing, if your group comes up, if you get number 45, and you sprayed, you'll get a prize. In this case, it was a voucher to a local hardware store, which is what we had to negotiate with the Ministry of Health. That was deemed an acceptable financial reward, because in theory, that could be used to sort of improve your home to prevent chirimachas. But and it was worth 50 sols, which is about $17, it could buy you about a gallon of paint. If every household in your group of 5 to 7 households participated, that prize for each household doubled. So 50 sols if you participated, but 100 sols if everybody in your group. So we're leveraging regret, aversion, we're leveraging obviously peer pressure there, and just reducing, you know, increasing the potential benefits to spray and decreasing potential costs. So that field trial wrapped up literally like 2 weeks ago. We're just starting to dive into the data, and hopefully this time next year I can report on which of these interventions, if any, increased participation relative to the current control campaign. Thank you very much.